Chicago.
He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
You pull a gun.
Hi, dude.
That's nasty, why?
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Dustin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie, Cage Match.
Tell me your children.
Yes, welcome to the ultimate Chicago movie, Cage Match, right here on 720 WGN. Our quest to find the best Chicago movie of all time. We started with 64 films, and tonight we are down to the final four. Four of the best Chicago movies ever made, but there can only be one winner. Tonight, our first matchup. The winner goes to the championship. Will it be Brian De Palma's The Untouchables? Or will it be John Landis' comedy, The Blues Brothers? It's Belushi and Aykroyd versus Costner, Sean Connery and Robert De Niro. The story of the Blues Brothers versus the story of Elliot Ness and Al Capone. One film depicts Chicago in the 30s, where the other just destroys Chicago and a mall in Harvey. Two of the best. One is a mission to beat the mob. The other, on a mission from God.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I want you to find this Nancy boy, Elliot Ness. I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burnt to the ground.
What kind of music do you usually have here?
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
Miss Ness!
You're not to approve of your methods.
Yeah? Well, you're not from Chicago.
Well, this is definitely Lower Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close to the Honorable Richard J. Daley Plaza.
That's where they got that Picasso.
Yep.
How do you think Capone knew about your raid the other night?
Somebody on the cops told him.
Right. Welcome to Chicago. This town stinks like a whorehouse at low tide.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy?
Dames. Music.
Baseball.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.
First you trade the Cadillac for a microphone. Then you lie to me about the band. Now you're gonna put me right back in the joint.
They're not gonna catch us. We're on a mission from God.
Elwood.
Elwood. I love that clip. 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you tonight on whether you think the Blues Brothers or the Untouchables should move on to the championship in our journey to find the best Chicago movie of all time. In studio tonight to rep for Blues Brothers, Mario Smith.
Hey now.
Mario's a poet and performer in Chicago, as well as the host of news from the service entrance on Lumpin' Radio. Good to see you.
Good to be seen, sir.
And then joining us on the line is Michael Phillips. He's the chief film critic for the Chicago Tribune, and he's here to die on the hill that is the Untouchables. Michael Phillips, good to have you, buddy.
How you doing, guys?
Hey, Mike.
Good. All right. So this is it. You guys are both, OGs in the sense that you have repped your movies all the way to this point.
That's right.
And so, Mario, again, why did you pick Blues Brothers?
It's my favorite Chicago movie. Right up there with Cooley High, it's the other favorite Chicago movie. It has so much strength and depth. All these many years later, it is just a beautiful movie. Mm-hmm. I love the Blues Brothers movie. Great movie.
All right, Michael, why did you pick The Untouchables?
I think The Untouchables has better musical numbers than the Blues Brothers. No, wait. It's a great slice of fantasy Chicago, written by a great Chicago writer, David Mamet. And these two movies, I think this Cage Match, Justin, is where I turn into Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. I don't feel like it's going to happen for me tonight, but yeah. You know what? I'm just going to go on and pretend like it's a fair fight.
The Untouchables had if you just look at how we got here, The Untouchables were able to beat Monkey Hustle, then Save the Last Dance, yeah. Then dispatched Home Alone in the Sweet 16, then About Last Night, last week to get here. So it's not like The Untouchables had an easy road. When you talk about movies like About Last Night or Home Alone, those are tough films to beat. So it's not like it's a slouch. It's the number one seed coming out of the Maxwell Street Division.
Oh, wow, that's what you were calling it.
There's the Wabash, the Maxwell, the Wacker, and the Division Street.
The division.
Yeah. But Michael Phillips on the line with us. Mario Smith are here. Let's try Ken to kick us off here. Ken, what do you like? You like Blues Brothers or The Untouchables?
Hands down, it's Blues Brothers all the way.
not even a thought. Just it's all the way.
My mother back in the day took us when we were small, young children, about 10, 12, to go see the Blues Brothers movie in Arlington Heights. And I've loved it ever since. I show my children and say, this is what Chicago used to look like, you know, when it was, you know, in the 70s right. and the 80s and that. It's classic.
It is classic. Thanks, Ken. All right. Ken's not wrong. That's how most people have responded to this match, that Blues Brothers is really the number one. I want to tell how the Blues Brothers got to this point as well. They obliterated the Blues Brothers' Chain Reaction. Then took out A League of Their Own in the second round. In the Sweet 16, dispatched the John Hughes comedy Uncle Buck.
Bye.
And last week, finished off Wayne's World. Not even close.
Yeah.
The Blues Brothers looking like, right now, as we look at our poll that we put up on WGN Radio, as the heavy favorite, Michael, as I'm sure you're well aware, Chicago loves their Blues Brothers. But we'll make a compelling argument for The Untouchables, as I watched The Untouchables, and Sean Connery in that film is, he won the Academy Award for that performance, or at least was nominated, I can't remember. But let's go to...
He won.
You could tell, obviously, with his performance. Let's go to Phil on 720 WGN. Phil, do you like the Blues Brothers or the Untouchables?
I'm taking Untouchables.
Ooh, why Untouchables?
Hooray! You're the one, huh?
I think the cinematography and those key scenes, whether it's in Canada, whether it's getting the bridge scene there, whether it's the stair scene at Union Station, whether it's the walking up to find Sean Connery and the tentative music to that, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Even the beginning part, walking around with the baseball bat, it is just, it's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, it really is. Phil, thanks for the call. He's not wrong. It's in the final four. These aren't slouches. And you can make a strong argument, I know a lot of people will, that The Untouchables is a better movie than the Blues Brothers, but we're talking about best Chicago movie. Michael Phillips.
Best Chicago movie.
That's right.
You know, I will say what it's about the thing I really like about these two movies going head to head. They really are, you know, unlike Wayne's World and maybe League of Their Own and a few others, and even Home Alone. These really are just brick and mortar Chicago movies. You know, they you're getting such great, as Mario was saying, you get such a great kind of a one of a kind look or at what this town looked like. I'm sorry, the caller said that, not Mario, but the idea that, you know, and the little backstory just about how Mayor Daley never really invited a lot of Hollywood production crews to come in and tear up the city in the name of making a movie, but then suddenly Jane Byrne's in office, and the director John Landis says, "Well, we want to destroy basically every cop car you got, and really tear up Lower Wacker, and then we want to end this thing on Daley Plaza." And she was like, "No problem. What can we do to help you?" And,
what time do you want to start?
And you know, and that really is, it really is a lot of what's good. I mean, I enjoy the movie a lot, and there's so many good people in it.
You're making an argument for the wrong film.
Everybody,
I know, but it's got what it doesn't have. It's got much more solid kind of, you know, if you like those characters on Saturday Night Live, and then you see this enormous, big budget slapstick melee with all this great musical talent at Cab Calloway, Aretha Franklin. You know, there's a lot to like. In The Untouchables, I think it is, as Justin said, a better movie. It's also got the world's most au fait, boring performance in the middle of it. Kevin Costner, before he was any good as an actor on screen.
Agreed.
He has led weight on a really great movie otherwise.
All
and
right.
It's too bad.
Let's cut you off. Let me get Tom in here, and then we'll take a break so we stay on time and keep this conversation moving. Tom, you like Blues Brothers or Untouchables?
Yeah, I love the Blues Brothers in this one. It not only is it funny, but it really captures Chicago. That scene from the apartment next to the L,
yeah, right.
It's just unbelievable. The driving underneath on Wells Street,
yep,
is unbelievable. And just to be honest, I'm not a great Kevin Costner fan, so that influenced me a little bit away from The Untouchables.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Tom. Thanks for that.
The Untouchables was a dry land water world.
Yeah. Dry land water world.
One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my
life. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Michael Phillips is on the line with us, and Mario Smith here. It's the Blues Brothers versus Untouchables, and we've got the text lines and the phone lines lighting up tonight. The winner goes to the championship round.
Yes.
Woo! Mario and Michael, hold up. We'll take a break. We'll come right back here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN here, Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. What's the better movie, The Untouchables or The Blues Brothers? That's part of our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. We are down to the final four. Mario Smith is here. Michael Phillips is on the line. We're arguing it out to see which one of these films is going to move on to the championship round.
Ain't much of an argument.
It's not much of an argument?
This is not an argument. This is a friendly, you know... It had to be this way. I've never went up against a vaunted film critic before, but it's the first time for everything. Sorry, Michael. It has to be this way that we meet.
It's all right. Vaunted is nice. I appreciate that.
Well, before we get into more of our discussion about the films, let's get to some of these texts as well. 630 says, this is Scott from Streamwood, who says, I think the Blues Brothers should win, but both movies are what Chicago is all about. A history of Chicago. The Blues Brothers is a great Chicago movie, has a little bit of downtown and the surrounding areas. Easy, the winner will probably win the whole thing. Well, I don't know about that. Tomorrow night might have something to say about that. It's standing room only for the Blues Brothers.
That's right.
That's what 847 says.
All right, 847.
Although Charlie from 940 says, I vote for the Untouchables. So he says, yeah, yeah. And then we got some more Blues Brothers down the line. The music, grit, and authenticity, the timelessness, the accents.
Thank you.
Nothing comes close to the Blues Brothers.
You'd have thought I made that movie. Great American movie.
Why? Let's get into it. So what is it about because we've had these conversations about the Blues Brothers and Untouchables, but I want to go back to the Blues Brothers for just a second. The lore is there. The style is there. Does the movie hold up? If you watch it in 2020, does it hold up as a comedy?
Absolutely. It holds up as a comedy. It holds up as a visual document of this great city. It holds up as a wonderful soundtrack album. It is still like one of the better sound. I mean, it's not Superfly, right? It's not Shaft. You know, it's not Purple Rain, but it is a great soundtrack album. And I think the difference in these two movies, when it comes to the way Chicago looked, you're doing a period piece about Chicago in the 80s, right?
Right.
Chicago was a different looking city in 1980 than it was in the Ness era. The Blues Brothers was right in that moment of the 80s. It looked exactly like it was supposed to look. It was that dirty, weird looking, big spaces, you know, just that gritty steel town.
Yep.
Thing. And it is the most unbelievably perfect document 40 years later to show people, if you ever wanted to see what a major American city looked like before X happened,
a love story for that
Blues
American
Brothers
city.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Well, the other thing too, and I'm always surprised, we talked about this last week, so Michael, you weren't a part of this conversation, but it is almost a precursor in this strange way. And I don't want to say precursor because there's always been that Broadway musical type film. But there, in 1980, they chose a musical comedy. It's a musical comedy. They keep going to
different
musical stuff.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot. Yeah.
It's surprising.
It's a musical, and it's a good one. I mean, you've got some of the most iconic musicians to ever walk this planet in one movie. And it's amazing how well it worked.
I wish it didn't have it. It's got some of the cutaway problems that happen with all kinds of musicals on screen, where you know, like Cab Calloway sort of gets chopped up, which is a real shame to see a guy in it. The guy, you know, kind of in his golden years, you know, just giving many of the moocher hell, you know, really a good number. And they keep cutting away, I think, away from the song to get back to the plot for a second. As if anyone really goes to a movie like that for the plot. You know, it's a pretty simple line. And I mean, I guess that's why I think it's a really good movie, not a great movie, just because it feels a little like, you know, like a lot of those SNL-derived movies do, even the good ones, like the Blues Brothers, where it's, you know, it's a sketch stretched out to 2 hours, and in this case, given like this massive car chase climax, which is a lot of fun and just like insanely destructive, which is kind of part of the charm of the thing. But the other part of the charm of the thing, I think, is if you know any of the backstory, half of this enormous budget went up Belushi's nose, and you know that's
so true.
That is well documented, and Universal, I believe it was Universal, put it out. They honestly didn't think that film was going to get finished because it was such a train wreck. All the lives so behind schedule, all the rest of it.
Somebody told us in one of the matches that there's only one scene in the film that you see John Belushi's eyes.
That's when they're in the tunnel.
Yeah,
when Carrie Fisher has the flamethrower and he takes his glasses off. And that's probably the only scene he was sober in.
But the
but why those glasses.
There's something about the film, and I'm not sure that this was the way they wanted to do this film. Maybe it was. But Jake and Elwood, as the main characters and the stars of this film, they both have this kind of chaos reigns around us at every single moment of this film, and everything is so crazy and out there. And they're just kind of like, they're going to walk through it.
Very deadpan.
Well, yeah.
And kind of straight, right, exactly. That's a good point. Straight manning their way through, you know, while the action gets more and more kind of outsized. And there's some stuff I just don't love about the movie, though. I mean, I don't love the Carrie Fisher stuff. And, there's just some scenes that I think, you know, they're not as good as they should be, or the jokes really aren't as either plentiful or as funny. But then, you know, you forgive it all, as Mario was saying, just the minute the musical numbers really get their moment.
Absolutely.
And I do, you know, I do love Henry Gibson just saying, you know, and the other Illinois Nazi just sort of meeting this hilarious end as they sort of fly through the air. I mean, that's the kind of stunt that you just do not see very often. Yeah.
Let's go back to the line. Steve, do you like The Untouchables or do you like Blues Brothers?
Well, Blues Brothers hands down for a backdrop to the city. But my wife and I were talking, there's a certain scene in Untouchables when they had Nitty empty his pockets at the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And Elliot Ness finds the math book 517 Racine written on the inside. Now, that is Chicago, because nobody else is going to notice that little intricate part.
Yeah, right. They care about
in the Blues Brothers, when Elwood was running from the bill collectors, he gave them 1050 West Addison.
1050 West Addison.
For his address.
Well, I never thought about the parallel. Okay, just wanted to toss that in.
Thanks a lot.
We will, at that. During those years, we would give the wrong addresses, all the sports teams' addresses to anybody.
Anybody.
Like, yeah. Hey, I live at
1050.
You know.
But that's the iconic thing about the Blues Brothers, is that those jokes, just saying 1050 West Addison, you're no longer thinking Wrigley Field. You're thinking about the joke in Blues Brothers about Wrigley Field. Right. That's the iconic nature of Blues Brothers, at least to Chicagoans. Michael Phillips on the line. Mario Smith is here. We're talking about the Blues Brothers versus Untouchables. One of these is moving on to the championship round. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll get to some of the poll numbers and continue with your texts and calls. 312-981-7200. It's the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Our phone number here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mario Smith and Michael Phillips are with us tonight. Mario, a poet and performer and the host of News from the Service Entrance on Lumpin' Radio, which is every Thursday, still Thursday?
Yeah, man.
All right.
Did it today. I'm dog tired.
There you go. And Michael Phillips, a chief film critic for the Chicago Tribune. Tonight, the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match between The Blues Brothers and The Untouchables. Which film should move on to the championship? I mean, we've been doing this for a month and a half to have 64 films whittled down to the final four, and down to by the end of this week, the final two is pretty amazing. 312 says, The Untouchables is a great movie about Chicago, showing its grit and its guts, but The Blues Brothers is Chicago.
Yes.
It's heart, soul, and second city sense of humor. Blues Brothers all the way. That really is, I mean, when you're trying to figure out what the best Chicago movie is of all time, that it's hard to beat that text, because that's really what you're looking for.
By the way, for anybody that is attempting to go to 1050 West Addison, it might not be anything there, but if you're going to 1060... That's where the other team in Chicago plays.
Pete came in right after that and told us, you bunch of Sox fans, it's 1060 West Addison.
I'm sorry, I'm a Sox fan.
Michael, there's been so much made of, I want to make this point for the Untouchables. There's been so much made in the conversation about the Blues Brothers and its music, but the Untouchables music is pretty special. And
oh my God,
the soundtrack is really famous.
I was just thinking that on the break. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the apples and oranges, obviously, because I mean, it's just, you know, it's a whole different story when you're talking about kind of classic Hollywood scoring. But that Ennio Morricone music that he wrote, the Untouchables score, is just some of the most stirring. You know, just really mad with the opening credits. You know, I mean, it's hard to get a theme that good, you know, that early in a picture. Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's funny that as different those as these two movies are, the music in both of them, it just lifts them up to a different level. And if anything, I kind of wish the Blues Brothers threw more of its screen time all the way to the numbers, so you could see like numbers in their entirety instead of, in some cases, you know, bits and pieces of them. But I don't know. The only other thing I thought about in the break is that I think if Jake and Elwood came back today and saw the new Wrigleyville, they would want to just tear that up like they tore up the mall. Am I the only one with a bad attitude about some of the redevelopment of Wrigleyville?
You can watch Blues Brothers and then get a bad attitude about the redevelopment of all, because there's no Maxwell Street anymore.
Yeah.
That Dixie Mall's gone. The Wrigleyville area, it keeps going, right?
Yeah.
There's no more SROs that are along Wells Street or Wabash where they can have a hot pot. Then they have a hot plate.
They had a hot plate. I lived in one of those, man. Yeah. None of that.
The other thing about the Untouchables, which is unsung as we kind of get ready for its swan song here, but it had a good run. But it's amazing to me the talent that's in that film that gets overlooked, because we've kind of been bashing on early Kevin Costner. But you have Sean Connery, who ends up winning the Oscar. Mm-hmm. And then you have a very, I believe, underappreciated performance by Robert De Niro as Al Capone. And
De Niro's really good.
He's really good in it. When you see it, you're like, oh, yeah, this is early, not early De Niro, but it's mid-80s De Niro, in the sense that we're not kind of sick of that act yet.
Right.
Well, and it's not a Capone movie, right? It's not a convention. It's not like a De Niro dominated movie necessarily. Even though he was the first guy listed and he's on the poster, that's the image. But he's used almost exactly the right way and exactly the right amount, because every scene really does land. And I mean that whole speech about I want him dead, I want his whole family dead. You know, that's just great writing and. The only actor who could deliver it that way. Andy Garcia is great, you know, as one of the guys. Charlie Martin Smith, really good. I mean, Del Close shows up for a scene. The greatest improv guy, one of them anyway, in this whole improv-soaked city. I mean, it's got really astute casting. And I think that's absolutely true of the locations. It's like the locations are kind of, you know, it's a greatest hits collection, just like a lot of the Blues Brothers is, too. And I don't know. It's a crazy thing to be talking about both these things, but I'm glad that Mario mentioned Cooley High. I mean, where did that end up? Did that get eliminated early?
No, it did. Cooley High made the Sweet 16, and it had the unfortunate matchup with Ferris Bueller. But I will say this, that Ferris won. We did the poll, and without the argument attached, the poll numbers were skewed to, you know, Ferris Bueller had 90% of the vote or whatever. But Rokon advocated for Cooley High that night, and he made a really strong argument for that movie and what it meant to people who grew up on the north side of Chicago, and just all about how cool that movie was, because that was a real movie and there wasn't a lot of production in Chicago at the time. And he makes a really good argument, and people off the chain, I mean, off the hook, the phone went saying Cooley High. So.
Cooley High was one of those movies when, and I remember when they were making that movie, Glenn Thurman's character, Preach, his sister lived right down the street from me. So there was a time where she had like a party, I guess, when they rapped or something, and all these people from Cooley High were on our block.
Cool. That's cool.
So, I mean, that was like, whoa, you know, that was a thing.
Right.
That was a big thing. And I think Cooley High means, for a lot of people who never saw the actual high school itself, just how important that movie is for black actors, knowing that there was work that they could get in Chicago.
Mm-hmm, right.
And there were a lot of great actors in the city who couldn't get work until a movie like that came along.
Well,
I didn't grow up in this city, but just seeing that film as a high school kid, you know, it just meant so much to me, and it really felt like, you know, that's a part of the city I haven't seen, because, you know, just, you know, white kid from Racine, whatever,
it means a lot to me that a film, at least we're arguing tonight about The Untouchables versus the Blues Brothers, and I hate to say this, it's unpopular, God knows, in this city. I'm really glad we're not talking about Ferris Bueller tonight.
That's tomorrow night, Michael.
as Chicago as that film is, I just doesn't have the stuff. It doesn't have the stuff that these two films do.
Ooh, that's a good. You're starting in on the tomorrow night's battle,
and
they're
me
not here. Yeah,
give me something for next week if they win.
Right,
thank you.
Right, Tom's on the line. Tom, what do we like? Do we like Untouchables or Blues Brothers?
Oh, I'm a huge Blues Brothers fan from way back. But one of the scenes that I remember was when they were advertising the upcoming show, the performance that they're going to do at the Palace Hotel Ballroom, and they were going down a beach with the bullhorn on the top of the car.
Yeah, right, right.
And that was, I believe, that was Phil's beach up on Route 12 up near Wakanda.
Right, like, right. It was Wakanda. That's right.
Yeah, and it was like, I remember that only because I remember going down that stainless steel slide when I was 17 years old.
That's awesome. Thanks, Tom. That's so true, because that's another thing that the Blues Brothers, I think, gets a lot of credit for. If you actually look at the scenes and where they're shot and the set of Blues Brothers, you're starting in Joliet.
Yep.
You're coming up through the South Side.
Yep.
You're hitting Maxwell Street. You're hitting downtown, all the kind of stuff you need. But they end up in Wakanda, where they play in that. He says it's 106 miles to Chicago.
That's right.
They had to go play out in the suburbs, and that was shot in Wakanda, and that beach and everything. And to me, that also makes for a great Chicago movie that includes more than just downtown or more than just one part of the city. It is actually reaching out and getting to the suburbs.
The Dixie Mall,
right?
It made Illinois look good. And as much as it made Chicago look great and important, and Chicago is the centerpiece of it, it made the areas around it equally as enthralling and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a great place that we live in, man. I do it all the time. I love Chicago, Illinois. This is a great place. And that movie really made me appreciate it more in, seventh grade. Like, whoa, it's a lot of stuff in Chicago. Because I couldn't go outside. I was stuck in the house. But now,
decades later, right? Decades later, the great thing about this city and the state, if you want to look at a 106-mile radius or whatever, bigger, you know, this city is so far from being fished out for really great locations.
Yep.
You just go a little further in any direction except maybe east, and there's blocks, neighborhoods, whole villages, towns, suburbs, whatever, that have not been exploited as much as they could on camera. And it's great to see it that way. That's the one thing about when you see, much as I really love it, The Fugitive, when they do those downstate scenes for the train wreck, I mean, where are they filming those? They're filming those how many states away? You know,
Carolina.
It is not Southern Illinois. So it's more like a typical Hollywood picture where they're, you know, certain things are doubling for certain other things. But with the Blues Brothers and the Untouchables, but especially, you know, both of them really in different ways, you know, nothing's doubling for anything. You know, I mean, Wakanda, sure, but, you know, it's all good. It's all good. And I love the location breadth and variety here, and I, you know, it's going to serve us really well as a film industry, I hope.
This has been easy work for me.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, for Michael, you luckily you're not doing Tomorrow Nights, which is the Ferris versus the Fugitive, which will be one of those two films is going to take on the winner tonight. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And when I come back, I'll give the poll results that we put up on WGN Radio today and WGNRadio.com and our Facebook page. And we'll continue and get some trivia from Pete that's left over. We've picked over a lot on these two films, for the Blues Brothers and the Untouchables. Michael Phillips on the line. Mario Smith is here. It's the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman here. The Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match, the final four. The final four movies. You've been listening to this program. You know that we started with 64 films. We've whittled it down to the final four. Tonight, one of these two films, either the Blues Brothers or the Untouchables, is moving on to the championship round to represent, to possibly be, to have a fighting chance to be the best Chicago movie of all time. This has been a monumental... and I can't thank both of you enough, because you've been a big part of this all the way since we started back before Christmas.
Right.
All right, 312-981-7200. Got some good texts coming in. The fact that you can dress up for Halloween with dark sunglasses, a fedora, and a dark blazer, and everyone knows you're a Blues Brother. It really says something. That's 630. That's a really great point. And Marilyn points out that Phil's Beach in Wakanda, where they shot that Tom was talking about, is reopening in 2020, but without the slide.
Yeah, thank God. When I worked for the Guild Complex years ago, we used to do a lot of stuff at the Cultural Center, and I would always walk up those steps, where Frank Nitti walked up the steps in the Cultural Center.
Oh, yeah.
I made it my business at least once a day to do the walk, and that was always cool. And outside of that, that movie, just no.
The Untouchables, I will say, one scene that I rewatched leading up to this, we talk about scenes, which, you know, as much as The Untouchables is probably going to go down here to the Blues Brothers, it still is a Final Four film. And as one of the callers pointed out about the cinematography, the scene in which Sean Connery, and I don't want to give a spoiler alert, but when Sean Connery, that character Malone, is in his apartment and the guy comes in with a knife.
Yes.
That scene is amazing because of the way that they use anticipation and everything about the suspense. But what's also great about it is he lives in a Chicago apartment.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes out of there and he comes in the back area and you see the back stairwell down, and Frank Nitti's out there and he's kind of perched up, that is a quintessential Chicago apartment. Yeah. Everything about that, the stairs and the back and the back door and everything about that is Chicago.
I'm sure there's a radiator in there.
Right? And look, yeah. It really does feel like the interiors look like they've, I mean, they just found the right apartment and maybe dressed it up the way they wanted to. They probably didn't build anything. I mean, it looks great.
Well, even within that, the apartment that Elwood lives in.
Yeah.
That by the L. So just that idea that would still be a thing in 1980, whatever, it's amazing. And he's like doing the whole thing. He turns around, there's the kitchen. Turns around, there's the bed.
And when the train rumbles by, everything moves. Everything's so good.
It's that's still a thing. Visually, that's one of the scenes I remember the most.
There's something about that, and I'd have to talk. You guys would know probably better than me. But who actually did Belushi and Aykroyd write the script for Blues Brothers? Were they the two that actually wrote the script for that?
Aykroyd did. I don't have it in front of me, but Aykroyd, I think, was a co-writer. I don't think Belushi got writing credit.
You can tell, though, the point I'm trying to make is that you can tell from the writing of the script that the people who wrote it lived in Chicago.
At one point
or another. Yeah. And that's what I think the authenticity comes from when you talk about just that joke right there of living next to the L.
Yeah.
That's a joke that only a Chicagoan's going to get.
And
yeah, I got one. Can I throw in one thing? I got a text here, and I forgive me for not knowing where this was in the bracket, but I got a text saying, "Hey, knucklehead!" So I got to listen to it. What about Michael Mann's Thief? Now, where did that end up?
Okay, so Thief is a point of contention because Nick DiGiglio loves Thief, and Tom, his producer, loves Thief. I'm trying to think. It went out in the second round.
Second round.
Yeah, it won, but it got beat by, you know, what I did was I did the first 64, the first two rounds. I had the WGN staff do it. They did an awesome job.
Right.
But it was up against a brand, and I don't remember, I don't have it right in front of me, but it was up against a brand name film like Transformers or, you know, something like that wasn't a great film but had a generational identity. So when you're saying Transformers, you're someone who might be 28 who's sitting in the office versus Thief.
Right.
You know, they're going to go, I don't know what Thief is, Transformers. Right. But Michael Mann film has been a big part of the conversation over the last month and a half. And it should have gotten further, but I don't know. We kind of all agree that we're not sure if Thief would have made it past the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I don't want to play the end here, but I, you know, a comedy was always going to end up in the final two. I absolutely believe that. There's no question about it, if not more than one. And it's just kind of how it is. I think people respond to the, you know, just sort of the barreling energy of the thing of the Blues Brothers. I mean, it's that chase, especially. It's just irresistible, and it kind of made up for whatever flaws you might think of, you know, Blues Brothers might have. It just, no, who cares, you know? I mean, I don't want to argue against my own movie, but I mean, it's...
You won't be the first one to do that.
And you know, as I say, I can't, I got to be honest with it. I think both of them really do
have this thing where they just feel like they're part of this town, you know, and they didn't, you know, whatever one thinks of one over the other, they at least they were produced and directed in a way that was like, you know what, we got everything we need here.
We don't need to go out.
It's all here.
Wayne's World or something like that. Ron from Facebook has a great point. He says, I watched Francis Ford Coppola's Brian De Palma direct the stunt of the fall off the library roof in the alley between Michigan Avenue and Wabash. Francis was backed up, seated on a flatbed truck while clothed in a brown leather suit, and he put on a clear face mask as protection for his face. The cars and the acting extras in antique clothing filled the street corners. It was so cool. I still vote Blues Brothers.
My man. And you know what? He's absolutely right. The Cultural Center used to be the Central Library.
Yeah, that's really cool, like that you were able to see that film being shot. Mm-hmm. I promise a little bit of trivia. Pete's got a couple of nuggets. Let's get to it before we wrap.
Oh, I have. Dan Aykroyd wrote the first draft of the script, and it was 324 pages long.
Yeah, man. Wow.
That's crazy.
And if that movie opened in 1980, it would be like finishing up tomorrow, you know, if they filmed the whole thing.
Yep. He had never written a screenplay, but he also had never read one either.
Really?
And to give Michael a chance here, I'm just going to toss this in that the Los Angeles Times called the Blues Brothers a $30 million wreck, and Newsweek calls it desperately unfunny.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, what do they know?
And we never mentioned,
what do they know?
We never mentioned Paul Rubens being in Blues Brothers.
He's not the maitre d'. What is he in the Blues Brothers again?
A waiter.
Yeah, he's a waiter in a restaurant. At Jay Paul, yeah.
Okay, so the poll tonight that we put up on WGNRadio.com and also on our Facebook page has the Blues Brothers with 76% of the vote to 23% of the vote.
Yeah.
So that plus the calls tonight and the text. The Blues Brothers moving on to the championship round. We knew it was going to happen. If you just look at the WGN Radio Facebook page, I was going to screenshot it and put it up because it was just Blues Brothers, Blues Brothers, Blues Brothers, Blues Brothers. Everyone loved the Blues Brothers. It is moving on to the championship, and it will face either Ferris Bueller or The Fugitive, which will be decided tomorrow night. I will say, it was great to have both of you. And, Mari, you move on next week. Yes. Michael, the Untouchables went this far. It was a good fight, and the Untouchables deserve to be in the Final Four.
All I can say is what De Niro said in The Untouchables, which is, what, am I alone in this world? You know, and that's, but Mario, good job, man. I think that movie is there, you know, but partly because of your support and your passion for it.
There
but it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to hear all this, actually. There it really has been fun.
Well, Michael, thanks for your contributions and thanks for being a part of it. Mario, you're back next week for the final. It'll be against either Ferris Bueller or The Fugitive.
Getting a lot closer to Chicago, baby. We're not 106 miles out anymore. Let's go!
The Blues Brothers moving on to the championship as part of our of course, ultimate Chicago movie cage match. So next week will be the final. I think we're looking at next Thursday. But it'll be the Blues Brothers versus either Ferris Bueller and The Fugitive.
Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers moves on
yes.
as part of our challenge. Thanks, Mario.
Thank you.